doctor!
You're listening to Pieces of Eighth, a Doctor Who podcast totally dedicated to the many and varied worlds of the eighth incarnation of that dashing Time Lord.
Each week, we'll be casting our eyes, and in many cases our ears, over the multiplicity of creations featuring Paul McGann's Doctor. My name's Kenny Smith.
And I'm Rebecca Chapman. We're going to be talking all things McGann, whether it's his fleeting appearances on our screens, or his many adventures in books, novellas, full cast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, or anything else. This week, we're going to be joined by a special guest who has encountered Paul McGann's Doctor on several occasions.
Yes, we're talking about Sean Carrollson, better known as the CIA Coordinator in Extremis, who first appeared in the Gallifrey audios, Narvin Ek Trelawnum.
Well, for those of us who don't like to show off by pronouncing silly big Time Lord names, Narvin. For those who don't know, who is Narvin and where did he first appear?
Well, Narvin first appeared in the Big Finish Gallifrey spin-off audio series, where he was basically keeping Gallifrey safe at a time when President Romana was trying to reform the planet to allow off-world aliens to come in to study at the Time Lord Academy and things like that. But for those of you who haven't heard, Gallifrey is a very political series. If you like The West Wing and stuff like that, that's pretty much what you're talking. You're getting Doctor Who political stuff on the Doctor's home world, and there's so many ramifications. There's a whole host of regular characters. We've got Leela, we've got K-9 Mark I, K-9 Mark II, we've got the Inquisitor, Romana One pops up, played by the late Mary Tam. And then we have Narvin, who is a rather fascinating character who's always trying to do the right thing. But in those early days, we never quite know whose side he's on.
I've never actually listened to the Gallifrey series. I might have to give it a go.
I would hugely recommend it because it's a complete run. It's a really, really good arc. It starts off, and we're set just in the days after Zagreus, the 40th anniversary Big Finish Doctor Who story. So we've got Leela and Romana have become friends and the world is opening up, but there's no Doctor there to come back and help save the day. And as it goes on through the various series, Gallifrey falls under the Dogma virus as the Time Lords start to mutate. Whenever they regenerate, rather than become new Time Lords, they just become mutant creatures. But why is this happening? And then as things go on, we ultimately, more recently, have become involved in the Time War. And we've got Narvin and Romana involved in that and the resurrection of Rassilon. But the incredible thing about this series is just how good a character Narvin is. For somebody who's not appeared in TV, in my mind, he's so fully fleshed out throughout the Gallifrey series. He's tortured and he loses the ability to regenerate at one point. Spoilers, but I won't say how or where or when. But that happens further down the line. And it's an incredible arc. Is in those early days, you never quite know where Narvin's loyalties lie. He's always, his loyalties to Gallifrey, but when it comes to individuals, it can get quite interesting, particularly when you've got duplicitous characters like Braxiatel, who obviously you know from the Benny Summerfield stories.
Oh, and I love Benny.
It's wonderful. But yeah, I would hugely, hugely recommend you give Gallifrey a go. If you've got some spare hours, then definitely 100% give it a shout. So you first encountered Narvin in Dark Eyes 3.
I did. I love Dark Eyes 3 because, I mean, Dark Eyes as a whole is a fantastic set and it's amazing. You know, we've got Molly and her tardy box. How adorable is Molly and her tardy box? And then you've got Narvin, it's just like, oh, new person, hello, that's great, you know.
Yeah. I think the fact that he's got there's something that it mentions when the pair of them first meet. It says that we haven't met before, have we? And saying no, but subsequently we've had Narvin meeting the Fourth Doctor on a short trip. He's been in a monthly range story, so obviously something's got wibbly wobbly, timey wimey along the way, and Narvin's or the Doctor's forgotten their encounters. So that makes it all quite fun. But then again, it's the Eighth Doctor. Of course he'll have forgotten.
That damn amnesia. But also, you know, it's quite likely that they're all going along on their timelines with each other at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I like Narvin. Yeah, he's a great character. Absolutely fascinating and played by a very charismatic and fascinating character in the form of our next guest.
Yes, we should probably stop talking and let him introduce himself.
So, hello, I'm Sean Carlson and I play Narvin in the ongoing adventures of, Narvin and the gang. Gallifrey, Time War, various Doctor Who adventures.
So, Sean, what do you remember of Paul McGann being announced as the Doctor?
Oh, wow, now crikey, that was a moment. Because, yeah, mid-90s, I was, like so many of you, an avid fan, and obviously still am. It's just that since then, obviously, I've come to work within the world of Doctor Who. But back then, I was a fan too. And it was a big, big deal. It was massive. So for people of my generation, you know, Doctor Who had been off air for what felt like an eternity. It wasn't that long when you think about it, you know, those sort of 5 or 6 years, you know, since Sylvester's last story. But it felt like an absolute eternity. You know, during that time, we thought, well, will it ever come back? And of course, everyone got terribly excited that there was going to be a TV movie. And I felt certain that off the back of that, there'd be a TV series. And my biggest concern, as it always is, you know, for a lot of Doctor Who fans, was, well, who's going to play it? Well, they get the casting right. And they always do. But it's always that thing of, who is it going to be? And there were various names touted at the time. And when Paul was announced as the Doctor, I thought, that is absolutely perfect. Brilliant, brilliant casting and a brilliant Doctor. And I mean that. I've always felt with the TV movie, it's just such a shame that they didn't take a different approach script-wise. That's what let it down. It looked fantastic. It had all the production values that Doctor Who wanted and needed and hadn't had the benefit of in the past. The one thing that Doctor Who's always had going for it is fantastic scripts and fantastic stories. And it was the other way around with this one. Nevertheless, he was brilliant as the Doctor. And there was a lot to like about the TV movie. And okay, you know, it wasn't the strongest script, but nevertheless, I think, you know, it did what it needed to do. It got fantastic ratings. You know, the ratings were really strong when you think about it. And there should have been a TV series, and there never was. So I've always felt we need more Paul. Those little moments, like, well, The Night of the Doctor, for example. Crikey, you know, it just leaves you wanting more. And I still, like a lot of you, live in the hope that one day we'll see a Two Doctor story with Paul.
Yeah. Do you remember when you saw the TV movie for the first time? Were you one of the people who queued up outside an HMV? Or did you just wait for the TV?
I waited for the TV, yeah. I think that's the best way to enjoy Doctor Who. Yeah, I remember that. I lived in Cardiff at the time. I had a house there and with some friends. It was about four of us, I think, that got together and watched it. And it was just massively exciting. And hugely enjoyable, and I taped it and watched it and rewatched it. But yeah, of course, John Pertwee had passed away right about that time, hadn't he? So am I right in saying, I vaguely recall, I think, that it was a little caption on the screen that it was dedicated to the memory of John Pertwee. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I was reading Doctor Who magazine at the time as well. I was, I bought that religiously throughout the 90s. And I think that for me, the two biggest stories in Doctor Who during the 90s was obviously the TV movie, and there was all the build-up to it, the anticipation. And then after that, the sort of, will anything else happen? And as time went on, clearly, you know, it wouldn't for the time being. And then the second biggest story, I suppose, was the announcement that this company, Big Finish, had the rights from the BBC to make the adventures, New Adventures of Doctor Who on audio, which was fantastic. I've still got that. No, I say I've still got that copy. I tweeted the other day, I'm sure some of you would have seen this. I'm at home and I'm currently building a voiceover booth so I can do more work from home. And I found a stack of my old 1990s Doctor Who magazines and thought, oh, well, I'll just pop those on the shelf in the voiceover booth along with all my Big Finish CDs. You know? And I thumbed through them and the last one I bought was that issue that's got that brilliant article, We're Going to Be Bigger Than Star Wars. Do you remember that one, Kenny? Where they've got Russell T. Davis, Stephen Moffat, Lance Parkin, Paul Cornell,
Mark Gatiss.
Who else have I missed out? Gareth Bob. All those guys talking about what Doctor Who would be like if it came back to the TV. Brilliant article. Brilliant. I reread that recently and just fantastic to read. Now, I gave that copy to a very dear friend of mine. He's a very lucky chap because I gave my... going back to the TV movie, I bought the commemoration, you know, the special edition Doctor Who watch, the wristwatch that came in the TARDIS tin. And I bought that in the Museum of the Moving Image. And I found it recently in a box full of things and got it repaired and gave it to this dear friend of mine. But I also gave him that copy of Doctor Who magazine when I saw him last Wednesday for a beer in Cardiff. And I gave him my Eccleston jacket. I had a leather Eccleston jacket, which was pre-Eccleston. It was just coincidental that back in the 90s, when I used to be in a band with this same close friend I'm talking about, Tim, I'll give him a mention, Tim Williamson, who was once a brilliant TV director. He doesn't work in TV now. I'm sure he'd still be a brilliant TV director, but he doesn't work in TV now. But I gave Tim my Eccleston jacket as well, which I used to wear in the 90s. So that copy of Doctor Who magazine, the last one I ever bought, June 1999, I think it was. And in there, I think it's the one that comes with the free CD. And of course, you know, it's the story about how Big Finish are making Doctor Who with Sylvester and Colin and Peter. So yeah, exciting times. They really were.
So you made your first appearance in the Natural History of Fear in the McGann's third season. What do you remember of how you became cast?
Oh, well, no, apologies for those of you who have heard this series before. I'm going to click a teether. What do I remember being cast? What I remember is that 2002, I think it was, 2001, I'm not sure, I was filming a corporate film in Cardiff and Lisa Bowerman was in it, coincidentally. We were talking and I suddenly realised who she was. I said, oh, crikey. I said, you do the Doctor Audio stuff. You do Big Finish, don't you? She said, yeah, that's right. We got on really well. And she said, oh, you should write to them. Now it all comes back to me. Yes. I said, I have written to them, but I heard nothing back. What had happened? I'd written to Gary in 2001. Yes, it all comes back to me now. Jason Hay Gallery came to see me in a play, got on really well. We had a beer. He said, write to us. Send your tape, cassette it was in those days, send a cassette to Gary Russell. And I sent a cassette in and I heard nothing, absolutely nothing back. And I think 2 years went by and that was it. It was when I was filming with Lisa and she said, oh, you should write to Big Finish. And I said, oh, I did. I got nothing back from Gary Russell. And she went, oh, well, try again. And then towards the end of that week, out of the blue, I get a phone call from Gary and he said, oh, we've just moved offices. And in the move, I found your cassette. I listened to it and it's rather good. Would you like to do a McGann story? That's what I remember being cast. And I was absolutely over the moon. I was made up because, you know, all I ever wanted was a Doctor Who credit on my CV. One would have made me very happy, you know, and thankfully I've got a few of them, you know, but I just remember, I think I played it cool. And Gary said, you know, would you be available? Would you be interested in coming in and doing a story with us? And I said, yeah, of course, yeah. And I was going, but that's what I remember. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you, Gary, for finding my cassette and finally getting back to me. I'm eternally grateful to Gary and all the guys. Of course I am, yeah.
You must have been quite surprised by the script, as it was pretty much as far from the norm as Doctor Who can be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, baffled. I was genuinely baffled because, you know, I was looking forward to, I suppose, a very traditional Doctor Who story. You know, you kind of haven't watched it for all those years. You know what you're getting. If I hope that doesn't sound disrespectful. You know what I mean? You know, it has its own formula, of course. And as far as I could see, what I'd heard of the audios followed that formula. You know, there were like four-part stories or more. I had listened to a couple before getting Natural History of Fear, so I sort of thought I knew what to expect. I'd listened to Storm Warning, which I absolutely loved, and I listened to Sword of Orion. So this was the thing. When I met Jason Hay Gallery back in 2001, when he came to the play, we went out to the car park, said goodnight, and he opened the boot of his car and went, oh, here, have a listen, and, you know, see what you think. This is what we do. and Remember, Write to Gary. So they were the two CDs that he gave me. And the other one was The Mutant Phase, which I'd heard previously because a friend of mine, Sarah Wakefield, was in that. So yeah, I'd heard three stories, and then I got this script and read it, and I was, yeah, quite baffled. It was unlike anything, you know, I'd come to expect of Doctor Who. But it was wonderful, and when we did it, I thought, God, this, I don't know what's going on here, but there's some fantastic writing, and this, I'm sure this will all make sense when I hear it. I'm not sure it did. But there was a story arc, wasn't there, through that season, I'm right in saying? And of course, that's the only story I've heard from that season. But I loved Paul's Doctor, absolutely loved it. It was just such a thrill, such a pleasure and an honour to be in the same room. And of course, in those days, we recorded that in Bristol, and we were in a circle, you know, Mike set up in a circle, in all in the same room, as opposed to the way that we've been doing it ever since at the Moat Studios, which is in our individual booths. And we can see each other through the glass. Well, not everyone. I can always see whoever's next to me and whoever's next to them again. So usually with Gallifrey, you know, I'm in booth number one, I think, and then next door is it's either Lala or Lou, and then next door again, you know, like that. But this was different. We were all in a circle in this little studio, quite an unglamorous location, really. I got there, it was chucking it down with rain, I remember that much. I got soaked heading from where I parked the car into the studio. And I got in looking like a drowned rat, sat in the green room, and then Paul walked in. And I know I've said this before, and his hair was kind of mid-length and sort of swept back. And you know, he'd also got caught in the rain. Somehow he just looked handsome and magnificent, you know, with his fine head of hair all hanging wet, you know. Yeah, so what else can I say? I loved Kerry's and Charlie. Great characters, great companions, and two fantastic actors who I bonded with instantly because it was, I think it was only a day I did on it. We got it, all my stuff, all done and dusted in one day. I was in and out in a day. But I'd like to think, I think I'm right in saying that I hit it off with those two in particular. And I know that India put in a word with Gary, you know, I overheard her say, oh, Sean's really good, you should use him again. And Gary went, yeah. And I thought, oh, yeah, he's really impressed. But he was already thinking of Gallifrey, so I'm told. I think he's told me this himself. And I think he was already thinking, you know, yeah, I've got to find something for that guy. And of course, that led to Narvin. In fact, I can't remember who I played in Natural History of Fear. I hadn't heard it in years. And of course, it was, rather than being the conventional sort of cast list, you just had all parts are played by members of the cast, you know? So we were all playing lots of different roles, multiple role playing. And I think I played about four parts in that, one of which was a character called the Censor. And I just seem to remember that there was something about the Censor that was just a little bit Narvin-ish, you know? There was a little hint of that. And maybe that's what led to Gary casting me as Narvin. I don't know, really. One thing I do recall is, and I was reminded of this recently by Conrad. I completely forgot it until Conrad mentioned this recently. There was one scene where a character has a complete sort of, I don't know how to describe it. It's like more than a mental breakdown. His brain, his mind is literally being scrambled, absolutely scrambled. And Gary said, Sean, I've got this bit here and I don't know, I'm not quite sure who's going to do this. Would you mind having a crack at it? But the thing is, he said, it's a difficult thing to write. And actually, although we've got this bit of script here, I mean, maybe we should just try improvising it. Do you want to have a crack at that? And of course, you know, it's my first day with Gary and the gang doing a Doctor Who audio. I desperately wanted to make an impression. I just, you know, yeah, sure, I'll have a crack at that. And inside I'm thinking, what, you want me to just get up in front of a mic, you know, in front of everyone and just improvise something, you know, some character whose, you know, brain is being scrambled and, you know, having this kind of complete meltdown. And I just went for it. Whatever I did must have done the trick because Gary seemed very pleased. And Conrad was very, very kind and complimentary afterwards and was the other day on Twitter because he mentioned this again. It was just something I'd completely forgotten about until Conrad reminded me of it. So Yeah, it's funny how vivid my memories of that day are, because it was one day, but it was the first day. It was the beginning of my association with Doctor Who and with Big Finish, the whole world of Doctor Who audios. So, yeah, it's a vivid memory and a wonderful one, really, you know. It's funny how one little job can lead to, you know, so much. I mean, it's not just, the amount of work that I've been fortunate enough to do with these guys ever since. It's about the friends that I've made, you know, and the people that I've met and even the places I've been, you know. I mean, Doctor Who has taken me to some of the most glamorous locations in the world, like Slough and Swansea, Chicago, Los Angeles. So, yeah, I love the conventions and I haven't done that many of them. And I don't know if I'll ever do one again. I will if I get asked, but I always enjoyed them. You know, they were always, huge fun. And that was a nice part of it as well, getting invited to go along and, you know, meet people. And it was always a pleasure, you know, and an honour. So, yeah, that was the nice part of it. It's just the friends that I've made in that world. I'm sure many of whom, like Gary and so many people, you know, will be friends for life. So that's the nice part of it. People talk about fandom and the world of Doctor Who, and I do think it's a very, you know, very, very lovely, kind, inclusive community. That's a lovely thing.
Let's take a quick pause, as after the natural history of fear, Sean did encounter the Doctor in person as Narvin in Dark Eyes 3, which we mentioned earlier, which was written by Matt Fitton, as the Doctor, Molly O'Sullivan and Liv Chenka tried to stop the Master, played by Alex McQueen, and his assistant, Dr. Sally Armstrong, as they looked to use the alien eminence to control the universe. So let's hear how Narvin came to be in Dark Eyes.
I'm Matt Fitton and I wrote Dark Eyes 3.
When did you decide to bring in the fantastic Narvin?
I think it was as soon as I got the commission for Dark Eyes 3. I've listened to Gallifrey, the Gallifrey series, right from the start, and like everybody, just loved the character of Narvin and thought it was a shame that he hadn't yet crossed paths with the Doctor. So this was kind of my box set given to me as my kind of concept album. So I thought it'd be great, seeing as we're dealing with Time Lordy things, that Gallifrey kind of anticipating a time war kicking off at some point and getting the Doctor's help and recruiting him and the Master, then it made sense that the coordinator in extremis of the CIA would put his oar in. In my mind, there's a whole backstory to it where this is actually Narvin dabbling in Gallifrey's past and future because he's absolutely embarrassed and devastated that he's accidentally set off the Time War in Gallifrey 5. So he's kind of scooting along the timelines, installing himself as coordinator so he can try and fix things, and comes across the Doctor along the way.
It must have been a real joy to write for him after all those years of listening to him as a fan.
Yeah, he's a character, he kind of leaps fully formed into your ears off the page and off the CDs, so it felt like his voice was quite easy to get hold of. So yes, it was a joy to write, and Sean is so brilliant as well. He just embodies the numbness of him so well. Yes, it was great fun.
And the fact that we got to see him as a bit of a man of action in the fourth part as well.
Yes, he kind of steps up and becomes a bit of a hero, helping the Doctor, standing up to the Eminence, kind of suffering this kind of prolonged, endless regeneration, and a worthy companion to the Doctor, I think, in this one.
Fantastic. Do you think we could perhaps see him crossing paths with the Eighth Doctor again?
Well, I wouldn't rule it out. But then he's in a bit of a predicament in the Gallifrey series. We left him hanging a bit. So, yes, time will tell what happens to old Narvin.
And now back to Sean. So you played Narvin for quite a while in the Gallifrey series before years later finally getting the chance to meet the Doctor properly in Dark Eyes 3. How did you find that, coming back to meet Paul as a different character?
On the one hand, it's still Narvin, so you know it's not a huge leap away from doing Narvin in a Gallifrey story and doing Narvin in a Doctor Who story. The character is very well established, and I know exactly where I am with him, and the people you know, the writers that, that work on those scripts seem to understand him very well also, because originally it was just, you know, it was a small group of writers who wrote the first few series of Gallifrey. And now there's so many Big Finish writers that have written for that character, you know, for Gallifrey, Time War and Doctor Who stories and so on. So, so no, it wasn't a huge leap at all. It was just the fact that that the Doctor was there. That was the exciting bit, you know. I mean, I think Gallifrey is as Doctor Who at the end of the day. It's just because I think you can have Doctor Who stories without the Doctor, because it's the world of Doctor Who. So, so no, it wasn't a huge leap, but it was just nice to do. It's something I'd always wanted. So when we were doing the first three or four series of Gallifrey, I always hoped and hinted, you know, I didn't hint, I begged. I always said to Gary, you know, will the Doctor ever turn up? Couldn't we have the Doctor in one of them? And Gary was like, yeah. So, you know, I kind of thought, well, it's not going to happen, is it? You know, but yeah, it doesn't need to, because, you know, you've got the ongoing story of Gallifrey, and then Narvin can go off and appear in other Doctor Who stories, which is, yeah, always hugely, hugely enjoyable.
What's your memories of doing those ones as you obviously got the chance to work with Paul again? Did you get to meet Nicola Walker?
Yes. Nicola Walker. I was familiar with her work, obviously. I mean, I don't know what year this was. It's, what was it, 2014, something like that? It's quite a while ago, isn't it? I guess it was about then. So I cast my mind back, but I certainly remember Nicola because I was a huge fan. And yeah, it was a thrill to meet her. She was lovely. Yeah, certainly Nicola, I remember because I was such a fan. She's brilliant. Oh, she's just fantastic on screen. So that was a buzz. Yeah, good.
Alex McQueen as the Master.
Alex McQueen. Oh my goodness me! Thank you for that, for reminding me. He's not just, you know, brilliant actor. Of course, I was absolutely familiar with his work from The Thick of It. Loved him in that. Absolutely loved him in that. So that was a thrill. And he's a really lovely guy, and he's very dry, very friendly. Yeah, but, you know, we've only met a couple of times, but he's one of those people that I'm sure if I saw him today, we'd just sort of pick up where we left off. He's so lovely. He was at the convention in Slough. That's where I last saw him, and that's going back a long time. Yeah, great guy to work with and a brilliant actor. And I remember at the time his performance was, yeah, quite delicious. He's a good guy and a good actor. He's terrific, yeah. Paul, of course, yeah. Always great to see Paul. Again, I'm putting all this, trying to put all this in order. So 2014, that was probably the last time I worked with Paul, but I've seen him since, I think the last time I saw him was at Chicago. That's going back a bit as well, isn't it? Probably the following year, maybe 2015 or 16, I guess. Yeah, Paul is great. I was thinking about Paul yesterday. You know, he's not one of those actors. Some actors love the green room. They love the company of other actors. And I hate that phrase, lovey, but you know, some people just absolutely, you know, yeah, just love the company of other actors. And I say Paul doesn't like the company of other actors. I mean, that's not true at all. But he's just, you know, he's quieter than that. What I find with him, what I've found on the few occasions we've worked together, is if you happen to hit upon a subject that he's passionate about, you know, those wonderful eyes of his, they just come alive. And then, you know, he's wonderful to talk to. I know that the first time I met him, there was a moment where there was a break in recording, and it was just the two of us sat in a room together. And I'm thinking, you know, at the time, yeah, crikey, you know, I was a bit starstruck. I've got Paul McGann sat next to me, and Gary's wandered off, and just me and Paul in a room together. And you know, we're making conversation. We end up talking about this and that. And, you know, passing the time, Gary's disappeared, and the conversation comes around to plays, and eventually I was talking about the first play that I ever did, which was a stage version of Testament of Youth, which was Theo Britton's First World War diary based on that. And that was it. You know, instantly we're talking about the First World War, and he just came alive because he's very knowledgeable and passionate about that subject. And it's a subject, you know, that means a great deal to me as well. I've done quite a few plays of that period over the years. And I've got family that, you know, that lost their lives in the trenches. So, yeah, he's great like that. And I remember a similar thing when we were in Chicago, and we all went out for dinner, and we get talking about classic cars, which again is something I'm nuts about. Paul is too. I said, "You still got that old Rover P5? He said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, I bought that with my first ever paycheck for Withnail, and I've still got it." And I said, you drove Jim Clark's Lotus, didn't you?" He said, "Oh man." I said, "Well, what an experience. Crikey." And that was it. We were off on cars. And I just remember, I think Nick Briggs and everyone else was, "Are they talking cars?" Oh, strange. But that's a shared passion. Oh, he's a great guy. He really is. And a brilliant actor and a brilliant doctor.
And of course, after everything else, you were back to work with Paul again and Sir Derek Jacobi in the War Master 5 Hearts of Darkness. What can you share with us about those sessions?
Yeah, you know, this is the lovely thing about this job. You know, you get to meet people. Sometimes you just meet them at conventions. Sometimes you're lucky enough to work with them. But you get to meet people, some of whom are absolute acting heroes for you. Derek Jacobi is one of those. I mean, as a kid, I probably shouldn't have been watching Like Claudius. I would say I was probably a little bit too young. But my mum let me watch it because she loved it. I remember being very shocked by it. And I haven't seen it since. I should go back and look at it. But, you know, that made an impression on me. So Derek Jacobi made an impression on me at a very young age. And then, you know, throughout his career, I've never seen him on stage. A very dear friend of mine, an elderly actor, Ray Llewellyn, who was actually in a Troughton story. He was in The Abominable Snowman. Ray is a brilliant stage and TV actor who's probably about 90 now. And thankfully, he's still with us. He's very old. And I saw Ray recently, and he was reminiscing about touring with Jacobi. He did a world tour with him, and just said he's just incredible, just the most wonderful, generous, kind person to work with, brilliant actor. I'd love to see him on stage, but at least, like I said, work with him, and that in itself is such an honour. And that's the wonderful thing about Big Finish. You get to be in a room, in a studio with people that whose work, you know, means a great deal to you. It's fantastic. So that was a very special session, working with Derek, and he was lovely. He was just terrific. Just a huge honour. I mean, similarly, I remember being in LA. I think it was the first time I went. I was in the green room, and John Hurt was there. One of the convention organisers, I was just saying, "Oh, what's John like? You know, I love him as an actor. He's just incredible." And she very kindly said, "Do you want to meet him?" I said, "What, meet John Hurt?" She said, "Yeah." I went, "Yeah." She said, "Come on." And off we went, you know, through the corridor. And John was doing, you know, photo sessions for the, you know, for the attendees. He was just about to take a break. And she said, "Can I just introduce Sean to John for a second? John, Sean. Oh, my God. You know, I was just blown away. There's John Hurt stood before me, gripping Tash, I think he had at the time. And yeah, he had a wispy beard. I was like, yeah, big Tash and a wispy beard. Hair sort of stood on end. And he said, hello, what do you think of LA? It's a crazy town, is it?" We were chatting away. And I said, "Look, John," I said, I mustn't take up any more of your time. I just want to say a quick hello, you know. And look, I know you probably hear this all the time. But I don't know what came over me, but I just had to say this. I said, "I just want to say you are, you know, your work is one of the reasons that I became an actor, and I just think you're incredible." And as I said this, it suddenly occurred to me, you know, he was very ill at the time, and I suddenly thought, crikey, he's desperately ill. And I just suddenly, I just welled up, you know, tears in my eyes, and I was quite embarrassed. And he went, "Oh, come here. And gave me a great big bear hug. Yeah, what a moment, God. So it's wonderful, you know, the people that you get to meet and work with. Derek Jacobi is certainly one of the best.
Would you like Narvin to have a bit more involvement with the Eighth Doctor, perhaps during his Time War series? Because I still reckon the policeman you played in the Christmas Invasion on TV is Narvin on an undercover mission to Earth.
It is. It is Narvin. Of course it is. I think people have already figured this out on Twitter. Yes, the policeman is Narvin undercover. Would I like Narvin to be in the TV series? Absolutely. Ah, crikey. I mean, you know, I'm all for more Narvin. It's been such, you know, such a pleasure and an honor to play him. I do hope that will continue. I know that, you know, we've sort of reached the end of the road with Gallifrey. And whatever happens next, I honestly don't know. And I think people don't quite believe me when I say that. You know, I think some of the fans on Twitter are like, yeah, you're just toying with us. But like, honestly, no, I genuinely don't know. Because I'm the last person they're going to tell, you know. So if Big Finish have plans for more Narvin or more Gallifrey in a different form, whatever it might be, Time War, I don't know, whatever. You know, more adventures. Well, they haven't told me. So, but I'm up for it. Of course I am. Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, my single biggest unfulfilled wish, yeah, would be to just play Narvin in the TV series. If only for one scene, just a few lines, you know. It doesn't even have to be called Narvin. It just be a Time Lord, you know, and I can play it like Narvin and everybody will know it's Narvin. You know, I would love that, you know. Just have the Doctor go, who was that irritating, bureaucratic little, you know, oh, that's Narvin. Ah, yeah, of course it is. I remember it now, yeah. Oh, him. Oh, crikey, he's still around, is he? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd love to play Narvin in the TV series. Of course I would. That's a little fantasy there. Yeah.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your pieces of Eighth.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. As you know, you're officially my favourite Welshman in all of time and space, apart from Russell T Davies, of course.
Of course, we all love Russell T. cheers, both. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks to Sean and Matt for their time in joining us this week.
And we'll be back next week for another Pieces of Eighth, when our special guest is going to be Alistair Dewar from Character Options. And we are going to be talking about the Eighth Doctor action figures, which I'm so excited about because, Becca, I love action figures.
Action figures are amazing. I'm going to have to get all of mine out and like put them behind me so that he can see that I am deeply appreciative of them.
Yeah, I've got mine in my shelf behind me, which is up there. You can see it, Becca, but they can't. Sorry, listeners, but no. I've got loads of figures on the shelf, and that's just a fraction.
They are amazing, and it's so sad that you'll never get to see them.
No. Unless you come round to the house.
That is true. Yeah. That is true.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week. So until next time, we'll see you then.
Bye. We will see you then. Bye.